Thank you guys for joining me today for Foster Care and the local church. My name is Jennifer Altum. I am a wife. My husband's name is Derek. You may have seen him running around here. You may have seen him more than I have this week, actually, because he's been super busy. I'm a mother to four boys. One of them is in the room right now, definitely on his Switch, but we're going to forgive him for that. And then I teach English. I'm an English teacher in the Nashville area. Now, I am not an exhaustive expert on this topic, but it is near and dear to my heart. So I'm just going to share what little knowledge I have and my goal. I hope that you will, you know, find those around you who have either walked this path or have some sort of connection to this topic. And then, you know, like learn as much as you can about this topic, right? If we all come together, maybe we can learn as much as we can. Now, I just said that I was an English teacher. I like 13 to 18 year olds. I'm very comfortable with 13 to 18 year olds. I'm not comfortable with adults. So, like my insides are shaking right now. But I'm gonna treat this just like I would my classroom. In my classroom, I do not lecture for 45, 50 minutes straight. I just cannot do that. And I find that most students actually do not do well with that. So I need a lot of participation and a lot of discussion. And then if you don't, we will be out of here in 10 minutes, okay? So the benefit of this seminar, really, it's on you. It's on you, okay? Now, I'm going to get a little political for 20 seconds, okay? Just with everything that has come up in the news recently. So I'm going to say one blurb and then we're going to move on. If we, the church, are going to claim to be pro-life, then we must be pro-life. And that can look a lot of different ways. And so some of what we're going to talk about today is just like one of the ways that we can be and act pro-life. Okay, now I don't have a clicker. I'm not that fancy, so I'm going to have to run back and forth. Okay, this is what I do in my classroom too. I don't have a clicker for some reason after 11 years. All right, 117,000, okay? This came from the U.S. Department of Human Services, specifically the Administration for Children and Families. Now, again, this was from 2020. This number is the number of children in the U.S. waiting for permanent placement. So that's not even counting those in placement or on their path to a permanent placement. We're talking like they do not know where they are going. Maybe they're in respite care. Maybe they're in temporary care or therapeutic care or a group home or even a shelter of some sort. That's crazy. That number is staggering. 3 in 1,000 children don't know what their next step is. And, you know, that spans all those ages. Ages when, you know, these children need to have some sort of clarity and consistency. All right, so, look, that number, I'm not here to guilt anybody. Okay, because foster parenting is not everybody's journey, nor is it everybody's story. But I do believe that caring for foster children and foster families and supporting foster care organizations is everybody's story. It is the story of the local church. And so I kind of want to share why this topic is near and dear to my heart. So I'm going to run and click it again. Okay. In 2010, my husband and I were in rural Oklahoma at a small church in rural Oklahoma. He was a youth pastor, and I was in between schools, so I was working for a federal grant at a local college. And my sister, who is 8 years younger than I and sometimes so much wiser than I, don't tell her I said that, okay? But she recommended Radical by David Platt. Who in here has read this book? Y'all, you gotta get it, okay? And obviously, because I said this, Randall House has some copies for you to purchase out there. But David Platt, if you do not know, David Platt, at the time of writing this book, was a pastor here in the Birmingham area at the church at Brook Hills, 11 miles from here in Shelby County. And this book, other than the Bible, okay, this book was pretty radical for my life. It was life-changing, but I want to read this little blurb real quick. He wants Christians to consider with an open heart how we, maybe some of us in here, but the church, have manipulated the gospel to fit our cultural preferences. How we have manipulated the gospel to fit our cultural preferences. So this book is filled with many thought-provoking claims. And then it challenges you to engage in this one-year challenge to, you know, read through the Bible and to do lots of things. But there was one particular chapter. So he's trying to convince us, you know, if we're looking in a neighborhood, our lives may not look much different than our neighbors who are not believers, right? We have manipulated the gospel to feel comfortable in our culture. And one of his chapters was about foster care. He calls the local DHS in Shelby County, and he asks her, how many homes do you need so that every child is placed? And of course, she does not ever get that question. So he has to press her a little bit. And she says, well, we would need 150 homes. So he goes back to his church, again, a church that he is already shepherding down this radical path. 160 families signed up. So, like, that grabbed my attention, that for a moment in time before another child was removed from their biological home, that church eradicated the need for foster homes in this county that we're standing in right now. It blew my mind. So I'm reading this book. Of course, I make Derek read this book. And I look at him and I said, I think we should do this. I mean, we're young and we had two empty bedrooms in our house. My job at the time was very flexible. I picked my own hours to work for this grant. And then, not to say that pastors have flexible schedules, but they kind of do, right? So he had some flexibility, okay? So that was the fall of 2010. And we go through the process, the application process. We go through the home study. We take all of these classes. And in my mind, we're just going to be a temporary foster home. Like, you know, right? The goal is reunification with the biological family. We have two empty bedrooms. We can be flexible. We can do this. No big deal. We are sitting in a class surrounded by people who are there for kinship placements. They already know the children. Maybe they're an extended family member, or maybe they were a teacher. So they may even already have the child in their home. They just now need to get certified. And I look at Derek and I said, I think we're going to adopt a kid through this. It's like it had never even dawned on me, right? Because that is not the American dream, to go that route, right? Oh, we're going to have a white picket fence and have a little boy and then a little girl. No. So it just like, whoa, big light bulb that maybe our story would be a little bit different. So we get approved in December of 2010. I knew we were going to get a phone call within an hour because all we had heard was of the great need, right? Pawtucket County in Oklahoma. There are so many kids who need a home. We did not get a phone call that day or the next week or the next 6 weeks. We got little nibbles here and then that never panned out. And I got so discouraged because I was so excited about this next phase and we had worked so hard. Looking back, obviously I can see the Lord's hand in our story and the story of two little boys I'm going to share in just a minute. So 8 weeks go by. I get a phone call that says, again, it's another nibble. We may have a placement for you after the weekend. I do not think anything about it because they have not panned out before. We take our youth group down to a conference. We come back. I am teaching. Oh, by this time I'm back in a school. I'm teaching. It's the afternoon. My desk phone rings. It is Monday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2011. And the desk phone rings. I say, hello, Mrs. Altum? Yes, this DHS, we have a placement. Two little boys, 5 and 3. Can you take them tonight? Yes, we can take them tonight. So, of course, I get some details. Y'all, I have never apologized to my students, but they did not receive a lick of education the rest of that class period, or even the students who came in the final class period. We did not learn anything. I can't even tell you what we did. I was just so excited. And of course, the afternoon we ran errands. I ran to the church to grab some things. And I don't want to, you know, this is not just my story to share, but it is also two little boys' story to share. So I don't want to give all the details of the actual meeting at DHS. But as we pulled out of the parking lot of DHS, I have a very scared 5-year-old and 3-year-old boys, Larry and Steven. And all I could think about was, okay, we're in America. What can I do to break the sentence? Of course, we're going to go to McDonald's and get a Happy Meal and play at the play place. There's not that much to do in rural Oklahoma. So that was option number one. And you know what? They smiled. When I said, hey, why don't we go to McDonald's? They smiled. And they ate some food and they played. And then, of course, in rural Oklahoma, we also went to Walmart because we had to get, like, some necessities. Let me show you. All right, the taller one on the left is Steven. He was 5. And then the shorter one is Larry. He was 3. The necessities are in Steven's hand and in the background. We needed a Nerf gun. And I think Larry got a plastic, like, hammer and like a toolbox. We also got a toothbrush and some toothpaste. This is the very first picture I ever took of them, and it's on one of those like slider phones, so the quality is fantastic, okay? But these boys forever changed our lives. So listen, yes, I'm showing you their picture, and maybe some people would say this is like clickbait or something like that. Maybe it is, but I did not apply to do this seminar because I wanted to make Derek and I look like these awesome saviors who are just like so amazing. And no, y'all, I really believe they changed us and impacted us more than we impacted them, okay? And now I'm going to lose my train of thought. So anyway, Valentine's Day, best Valentine's Day ever. And this is what we celebrate on Valentine's Day. We went to an escape room. Who was I talking to about it? We went to an escape room this Valentine's Day and we made it out and they loved it. Anyway, we are not perfect. Derek and I, we are not saviors. We made a lot of mistakes. I want to tell you about one mistake we made. Okay. At this time, I obviously knew like my brain knew that these kids were hurting and that they had been through a lot and maybe like who knows what they remembered. I was thinking about it like from that perspective. Now this is talked about a lot now of these days. You read articles, you read blogs, it's all over social media, this idea of trauma. We didn't get that word in 2011. So I'm just gonna parent these kids the best way I know how, and it is not trauma-informed parenting. So after several years, we realized we needed to look into that. So just to kind of recap our story here, we got them on Valentine's Day. We worked for several months towards reunification with mom. Was not going to happen. So then from like June to December, DHS is working with mom to kind of create an open adoption. She agrees to that. From January to July, the courts are hunting dad down to serve him his papers. Well, if you don't know where people live. So it took a while. We had a relatively easy foster to adopt story compared to some people. It was a year and a half. So on August 6th, 2012, these two boys became Altums. And we became like official parents. It was in my mind, of course, amazing and great. And again, I'm not thinking trauma-informed, okay? Just yesterday on my Facebook memories, it popped up that we got our court date. I was told about our court date yesterday, 10 years ago. So they will have been Altums 10 years in this August. Okay, so let me talk about trauma really quick, and then I want to get to like the meat of the seminar. The quality is not great, but this infographic is from an organization in the UK that's wanting to eradicate childhood trauma experiences, 70%, decrease that by 70% by 2030. Listen, trauma, whether that's in the womb or in the newborn stage through early childhood, it changes the brain chemistry and it changes the brain structure. So I want to make sure I'm saying the right thing. It alters the brain chemistry. It alters a child's fear response. So if you have not experienced trauma, you would experience fear under normal, typical situations that would require fear. An altered fear response means that response is triggered in situations that you and I may not deem as worthy of fear. And so therefore, we don't fully understand their responses or their behaviors or even what they say, but they're responding out of that fear. And then it also impacts their sensory processing ability. So when we see these kids, you know, having a tantrum or it's because they are overloaded. Their trauma has totally changed how they can process all of the noise or the sights or all of that, okay? So look at this, the circles up here. I was gonna have y'all like say, what do you see up here that's really interesting? Well, you can't read it because it's blurry. But I do wanna say that, look at the three circles. A traumatized brain is bottom heavy. It affects their thinking center, it affects their fear center, and it affects their emotional regulation center. Y'all, this means that now Stephen and Larry are 16 and 14. They may not respond the way that I want them to respond, and it may be because of this, right? It may be because of this. So I want to tell you about one resource that I believe every foster and adoptive family should have. And if you're a layperson or a minister at a local church and you want to support your foster families or your adoptive families, you need to have this resource as well. All right, this book is called The Connected Child. Karen Purvis, along with two others, wrote this book. She goes into great detail about the impact of the brain. But what's really great about it, y'all, she has then created a type of intervention, and she lays it out in this book. And of course, because I'm mentioning this, Randall House has some for sale in the hallway out there. I encourage you all to get one. Okay, I was told to really push that one. Okay, y'all don't tell them I said, oh, I'm being recorded. Okay. All right, in this book, I want to say this. The traditional way of parenting. So think about how you were raised if you grew up in a traditional home. This idea of parenting through punishments, right? Well, you're going to sit in time out, or we're going to take this away. That could be counterproductive when you have an altered fear response, when you have an altered emotional regulation center, when you have an altered brain chemistry. So it may be counterproductive. And we learned this, Derek and I learned this, as a result of therapy. I'm a big fan of therapy. I think everybody should go to therapy. But we learned that as we were trying to work through some of this stuff with one of our kids, and they said, you know, this idea of redos. You know, we struggle with our kids sometimes, and they don't do what we want them to do right away, or they don't respond appropriately. And then so when they don't respond appropriately, we want to kind of lash back and say, well, I'm the parent, I'm the authority, you need to do it as I say. The therapist encouraged this idea of like, do you want to try that again? Could you try to respond differently? And then let's move on from there, right? None of us are perfect. I for sure am not perfect. So I get a lot of redos. The Lord gives me lots of grace. So I want to encourage you to check this book out. I think, again, every foster family, every adoptive family should have this book. And I think anybody who's working with students, whether that's babies all the way up, you know, through high school, they at least need to be aware of these concepts. Because more and more, we are going to have students in our churches who have experienced trauma. And it doesn't even have to be this kind of trauma, okay? All right, now, talking about this therapy, because of the internet and all this, I don't think the video is going to show, but Karen Purvis, she, through Texas Christian University, she created a type of intervention. It's TBRI, Trust-Based Relational Intervention. And it basically takes the principles from that book to create a way that you're basically reframing these situations for your child so that they can kind of go back to how their emotions should have been regulated in the first place. There's a lot of eye contact, there's a lot of physical touch, and there's very much a soothing and calming voice. And again, this video that I was going to show would be really helpful, but it's kind of lagging this morning. So, I got to see what time it is. All right, not bad. Okay, we're going to get to the meat of what the local church can do, okay? All right. I'm going to put y'all into groups. No, I'm not. I'm going to let you get into groups. All right. So this is what I would do in my classroom. I talk for a little bit, have some discussion, but then it's time for you guys to give me the answers. Remember, I'm not the exhaustive expert, nor do I want to be, right? That's too much pressure. I think there are three things we can come up with in this room today. And here's what we're going to do at the end. If you are wanting everybody's ideas, I'm going to get your email address, and then I will email you all of the ideas that you come up with, hopefully within the next week, but maybe not because I have to go back to in-service on Monday. So hopefully within the next week. So I would like for you to, you're going to see there are index cards kind of spread out. Your group really only needs one index card. I'd love for you to get into a group of three or four. And I know that some of you may not know each other, but that is okay. We can make new friends in this room today. All right, so get up and move around and get in, you know, into a group of three or four, por favor. I also have five writing utensils if you need a writing utensil, but that's it. For my educator friends, we're going to do a kind of think, pair, share right now. All right, great. Okay, so we're going to do one side of the index card, only one side, okay? And in your group, I'm going to give you, I don't know, we'll go with a minute and a half to 2 minutes. 2 minutes for your group to list I want to know, what if your local church, okay? What if your local church is not on board? What if your local church cannot be on board for whatever reason? So I want you to think about you personally, right? What gifts and talents and abilities do you have? So in your group, so just one index card per group, otherwise the list could go on and on. I want you for a minute and a half, 2 minutes to list down any idea that you can come up with that an individual believer can do to support either a foster child, a foster family, or a foster care organization, whether that's like a nonprofit or a governmental agency. Okay? Ready, set, go. All right, so as a teacher, we're gonna go around and share our top two. Now, if another group steals your idea, you can pick a different one from your list, or you can just mention one. If a group steals all of your ideas, then frantically, before I get to you, come up with something. Okay? All right. We'll start over here, and I promise to make it even next time, and I'll start over here. Okay. Your top two ideas.
Top two ideas were providing respite care.
Yes.
And educating and sharing with the church members.
Ooh, that's a good one.
So many don't know what is involved, and they don't know. You may have Sunday school teachers that don't understand where the behavior is coming from.
Yes. That is so good. That was not on my list. For those of you who don't know what respite care is, you can also go apply and go through the paperwork and the home study, and essentially you would be approved to do very short-term care. So, you know, if so-and-so has a foster child and they've got to go out of town for maybe a business trip, but maybe the child is not approved to go out of state, that child can stay with you over the weekend. And it could be a little bit longer, can be a little bit shorter. It could just be, you know, one night.
Maybe a date night.
A date night. Yeah. Yes, even that too. Like, it doesn't even have to be like a trip that's out of town. So respite care, that's great. And I love this idea of educating the church. You're absolutely right about that. Okay, this group. I love that. So if you couldn't hear financial aid, they're usually, depending on your state or organization, there usually is a stipend, but you can probably guess, like government-wise, it's probably not enough. And then a mentor, right? Like, I think it was Awana that came out and said, you know, students need to have, I think it's 6 adults outside of their immediate family that are living an active Christian life in front of the child. They are more likely to not walk away from the church. Well, how much more important than too when we're looking at foster families? That's great. Okay, this group on the back wall. Yep, I like it. Okay, this one. I think that's a really good question, and that's going to depend on your state and or county. So, for example, yes, we needed respite care for an overnight. I think one time my mom came from Nashville because she could stay overnight with them. But for just a date night, we were able to just get babysitters. So, like, I think about that. Think about all your, like, teenage kids or college kids, and it'd be like a parent's day off, you know, and they, I love that. That's great. And that's also a decent, like, fundraiser for kids around Christmas time if they want to watch kids. All right, this group in the middle. Good, good, good. All right, this front group.
All the ones we decided to say are going to take, so I'm going with other ones. We have volunteer with a local agency to do, you know, they have different things like handing out backpacks, putting together, and there's stuff that local agencies do. So volunteer for a local agency. And then to be an ear for foster parents to vent.
That's a good one. I like that one. That's great. We're going to sort of stay in the same vein, but extend it just a little bit. So flip the index card over. We're going to go to the blank side. What can a local church do? So some of what I heard could also be applicable to that. But what type of system or program or method can your local church put into place to support foster children, foster families, and adoptive families? Because that's its own, you know, beast, and foster care organizations. So we're going to do 2 minutes again. Ready, set, go. All right. I'd love, same thing as last time, but this time we're picking the most practical for your church. What is most likely to actually happen within your local church? And again, you might be in a group that has a variety of a type of church, but just kind of discuss and pick your top two local church ideas. All right. We're going to start with this, but I hear something about laundry, and I am intrigued. That may not be related to this, but I'm intrigued. Okay, we're going to start with the laundry group right up here in the front. Your top two church ideas.
That age or that sex, and that's how the laundry thing came up. we were talking about how easy it is. It's just one person has a call on a ministry.
Yep.
It's just somebody to organize it. This doesn't even cost anything. People donate the clothing, donate the stuff. It's just somebody to have a calling for it and to put it together. So that's really all it is. And the explanation was, we have someone at our church that did that with a laundry ministry. She just felt called to do laundry on Tuesdays. We have the washer and the dryer. They show up, drop off their clothes, sit with her. We give them sandwiches or whatever they need while they're waiting, some water.
I love it.
It didn't exist until she organized it.
Yeah.
She did it, and that's all it took.
Yeah.
So that was one. And then the other one was inviting a local agency to speak.
Yes. Well, and I'll plug that at the very end. That's great. Okay, my second group back here.
We sort of followed that, but having a pantry with resources like toys and different size clothing and toiletries and so forth that can be accessed by whomever. As you know, some kids are there for an hour, some are there for a weekend, some are there for short periods or long periods. So just having access to that without maybe some kids who are currently in trauma going to a larger place and have to get things and have a quiet place to go to get those things. And then a buddy system within the church where, like, men who can sort of take some of those kids under their wings and be that father figure, you know, kind of thing, multiple people to be an influence for them, or, you know, females for them.
That's good. That's good. I like that. A buddy system within the church, like a mentorship. We heard that a little bit earlier. All right, the next group.
We did ask the church to put together a fundraiser for the actual closest foster care program or foster parent. If we were able to get, you know, individual households that had something to do, an actual fundraiser specifically for them. Again, offering a training class from the actual DHS to come in and, you know, help to promote that through the church.
That's good. Yeah, I like that. Okay, my group at the back.
So we do a storehouse, which is similar to the collection of items. We do the storehouses open all the time, so they're always bringing things to the storehouse. So that when we do have a family that is adopting or fostering or maybe homeless, we have as well with children, then we just pull from the storehouse for that. And then we try to do a yearly project. We do adopt a child tree.
Yes. That's good. Yeah.
That's been very, the church really likes to talk about that.
It's personal.
It's exciting because it is down to the detail of exactly what size that child wears, what that child wants. And so, and the whole family participates. So, family with children can see how important it is to give to other children.
I like it. Okay, this group.
There are showers for the family.
Oh, yes. Yes. So good. I love it. Is that it? They stole your other one. They stole your other one. Okay.
A lot of them had been said, but the collection of supplies, clothes, shoes, bedding.
Yes.
Bedding's a really big deal. You may have a bed, but you may not have any bedding. And sometimes that bedding goes with the kid when they leave.
Uh-huh.
So that's a constant need. But the other thing that we kind of came up with is a social or community outlet. And so there was a time when Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts were a really big deal. I'm not going to go into that. That's a soapbox. Not a big fan. But there are Christian alternatives to that now.
Mm-hmm.
Starting something like that in your church, because we know from personal experience, you're taking in children that have struggled with a trauma, and you trying to help them through that is one thing, but being able to plug them into something where they are with peers their own age, it's not a school environment, but yet they can learn life skills, do crafts, they can do other things. It's an outlet for them to be able to engage with other kids their own age.
Yep.
That takes them away from their sometimes not so pleasant reality,
mm-hmm.
and they're in a state of trauma. So being able to plug, to allow the church, and the church kids would benefit from that as well.
100%.
We had talked about how the parents, if they're going back into reintegration, the parents could even continue bringing, if they're willing, continue to bring that child to this event.
And way to get those parents then onto church property. Yeah, love that. Okay, we are quickly winding down. So the one last thing I want you to do, around you there should be another index card. I'm going to take all the index cards, so it's no big deal because I'm going to email you. I want you to find an empty index card. And for 1 minute only, we're doing like the flash round. We've heard like this, the storehouse, I've heard the pantry, kind of this idea of a needs closet. You can only have 10 items in your needs closet. What are those 10 items? Only 10. Ready, set, go. All right. So as you're kind of finishing up your list, I'm going to be collecting all of the index cards and I will compile the whole list for individuals and I'll compile a whole list for local churches and then I'll also compile this list of needs or must-haves for the needs closet. Before I wrap up, I'm going to give you some homework because I'm a teacher. Why not? Actually, I'm not a big fan of homework, but that's a whole other story for another day. Listen, if you want to know how Free Will Baptists are already involved in this ministry, when we walk out of here, the exhibit hall should be opening soon. Just walk around the exhibit hall because you will then be able to talk to people at the Free Will Baptist Family Ministries booth. There are other booths related to various Free Will Baptist children's homes in our country and also outside of the country. There are ways that you can get plugged in so simply, even just by talking to somebody. My goal today, obviously, I'd love, you know, to eradicate the need for foster homes at the moment as well. But my goal today is that you would be able to leave. Like, the convention is over, you know, tonight. You get to go home, and maybe you can start something right away, whether that's you as an individual or whether that's you that you can take to your church, whether you're, if you're a layperson or you're employed by the church, you can start something with some of these practical ideas.